Welcome to Radio Times. I'm Mike and Scott in for Marty Moscawain. Like millions of Americans, I spend my work days in a cubicle. I call a cluttered desk and two file cabinets my own, and I work in close proximity to my co-workers, shielded on two sides only by a set of flimsy walls. Cubicles offer an illusion of privacy, but yet no real protection from noise and interruptions, one of the chief complaints workers have with this setup. We'll talk about cubicle life during this hour, and we'll also discuss what the office of the future may look like. In a little while, we'll hear from John Goins from the Berkeley Center for the Built Environment. He has researched the effect of cubicles on employees and their productivity. We'll also hear from Mike Chudy of SAP. SAP's Sao Alto campus has no cubicles and is designed to foster lean, agile production development. We'll find out exactly what that means, too. Joining us now is James Thompson. He has written The Cubicle Survival Guide, Keeping Your Cool in the Least Hospitable Environment on Earth. And he also writes The Cubicle Survival Guide blog. James, welcome to Radio Times.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, James, do you work in a cubicle these days?
I do. Yes, I do.
So why did you want to write this book?
Well, it's kind of funny how it turned out. Before I wrote the book, I had jobs that didn't require working in a cubicle. I was a teacher for a while, for example. And when I made the switch, I ended up basically in the white-collar world, and the guy next to me one day, my first or second week at work, sneezed. And I said, "Stephen, I heard you sneeze, but I can't see you. Should I say bless you or not?" And he just kind of laughed, and he said, "You can always email me." But then he kind of said, "You know what, someone really needs to write a book about how to behave in cubicles and the whole rules regarding etiquette."
When did cubicles become popular and how?
Well, cubicles came about in the early 1960s, and they're credited to a guy by the name of Robert Probst. I don't know if they've ever been popular with employees, but they certainly have with employers. And that's just basically based on fundamental economics. They're cheap, they're easy to move around. They're easy to adjust to changes and fluctuations in your force of employees, whether you're taking on more or letting some go. So it's, from an economical standpoint, it's been great for employers. But from a human standpoint, I don't know if it's been so great for employees.
So the walls are supposed to give us a little bit of privacy, correct? Because before cubicles came about, people often worked in just wide open offices, right, if they didn't have an office themselves.
Yeah, that's, in many respects, that's true. And I think what they're trying to do, and as a matter of fact, they're still trying to do that today, and that's find that balance where people feel they have enough personal space where they just won't go crazy, but they're also, they have enough of a workplace environment that encourages the flow of ideas and communication. And I think that's different for different professions, and that's changing even as we speak today. I think they're still trying to figure out the human psychology behind it.
And what are the chief complaints that you experience as a cubicle dweller yourself that you hear from people who interact with you on your blog?
Sure. Well, I've done a lot of research on this, particularly for the book, and it usually comes back to smells,
mm-hmm.
noise, and hygiene, basically. And the smells can be anything from people bringing in, you know, there's stinky lunches, and that really distracts people. And in terms of noise, people who can, you know, who are loud next to you, or they have coworkers who come over and just linger, and they talk about, you know, what they did on the weekend, or even talking, you know, about personal issues with their doctor.
I want to stick to the issue of smells for a second, because we have a cut from the office that I wanted to play. Let's hear that.
Okay, Ryan, you told Toby that Creed has a distinct old man smell.
I know exactly what he's talking about. I sprout mung beans on a damp paper towel in my desk drawer. Very nutritious, but they smell like death.
So smells are a big deal, because we can tell what people have for lunch. Talk a little bit more about that. How do people work that stuff out?
It's difficult. You know, for example, if it's food, it's pretty easy. And again, this depends on people's differing, you know, personalities and how open they are to confrontation. But if somebody's bothering you with smells from their lunch or their food, you can easily get up and maybe disappear for 20 minutes, or, you know, ask them to perhaps eat in the kitchen. When it comes to things like body odor, of course, that's much more personal, and that requires a whole different set of approaches. It's really difficult to walk up to somebody and tell them they don't smell good.
Yeah. And the other thing you brought up already is the issue of noise and overhearing people's conversation. But it's almost it's impossible not to hear what people are talking about. You're not trying to eavesdrop, but somebody else is talking about something and you can hear it.
That's so true. And it comes down to the person who is talking to own the situation. If they have a personal phone call that's talking about sensitive information, they need to get up and go to the stairwell, maybe go to the parking lot. You know, no one's going to, I wouldn't think anybody would be too upset about them disappearing for 5 or 10 minutes when it's appropriate. Another big thing is music, because a lot of people think that they just, if they put on their headphones, it's not going to bother anybody. But a lot of people listen to their headphones so loudly that it does. And that can create a little bit of friction as well.
I wanted to talk a little bit more. Nowadays, at least I feel we have the option of the cell phone, where if we have to make a call that's more private, we can step away. And I frequently see my coworkers getting that call and then suddenly saying, hold on. And then you see them walking down the hall in desperate search of a place where they can hide.
Yeah, well, that happens all the time, and it's great because it's really interesting to see how workplaces and cubicles are adjusting to changes in technology. But the cell phone has probably done wonders for some people, and it's probably not so great for others because a lot of them still have not tuned into the etiquette. It's like, you know, listen, you can actually pick up your phone and walk away and carry on this conversation. If you're going to fight with your significant other, or, you know, if your child's in trouble, you really don't have to do that, and you probably shouldn't in front of other people.
And I'm sure ringtones must be driving people crazy, too. We have somebody in the newsroom has a howling dog that goes like, oh, oh, and then other people have the old-fashioned ring, ring. So I know by now, I think I know 10 people's ringtones by heart.
Yeah. And you know, the funny thing is, even on vibrate, because people will set their phones directly on their desk, and all the desks are connected, so when it vibrates, everybody knows
right.
when it goes off.
Right. So I also often see my coworkers in search for a hiding place. Do you see that in offices? Do people talk about that, where you're trying to find the place where you can talk to a coworker in private, or you can have that conversation, but it's tough to find a place?
It is. I think most people, when they've been at a job long enough, they figure out the little tricks like that. But if you're trying to get some privacy, the stairwell or designated office or places like that are typically pretty good.
Yeah. And now another thing that people often talk about is cubicle decoration. So we want to individualize our little tiny square space a little bit, but what's appropriate and what's not appropriate?
That's such a good question. And the reason it comes up a lot, too, is because it changes. It really is determined by the culture of where you work. So that's one of the things you really need to figure out before you even start putting decorations up. However, based on that, there are certain guidelines that everybody should follow when it comes to religion, politics, people in bikinis, whatever. It just can't get too edgy or too controversial. You don't want your cubicle to look like some sort of political campaign office, because everybody has very strong beliefs about that. Or even, like, you know, if you're a big Green Bay Packers fan, you know, you might want to tone it down a little bit, too. It just depends on how far you want to go and what's acceptable by the culture that you work in.
We're talking with James Thompson about life in the cubicle. He has written The Cubicle Survival Guide and also writes the Cubicle Survival Guide blog. And you must get so many emails from people, just because this is such a big issue for so many of us.
I do. And like I said, you know, it's constantly evolving, too. So people are looking for ways to adapt and to adjust. And some of the things are about cubicle walls getting smaller, going to tables, and other things are just the way they've been for decades, which is basically conflict for people who have different opinions about what constitutes too much noise, too much smell, things of that nature.
And I wanted to ask you about something else. I feel this cubicle culture doesn't end in the office, because even in the bathroom in a typical office, you don't have any real privacy, because there are no real solid walls there
right. Either. Right.
So I just sometimes feel like your whole life is on display when you're at work.
Well, it is. And it's kind of funny, because you would think that the whole vetting process of all the interviews kind of screens out people who don't know how to behave in social situations like that, but that's not always the case.
Yeah. And what are companies listening to what employees have to say about working in a cubicle? Are they concerned about people getting distracted and so on?
I think they are. I think basically, you know, it's in the company's best interest to get the most out of their employees in terms of productivity. And I think that's changed over the years. However, I don't think it's ever been really perfected. And for better or for worse, I think the cubicle is kind of the compromise that everybody's come up with.
Is there anything you like about cubicles?
For me, I do. I tend to get along with the people I work around, and they're really fun. And I prefer to walk into work and be able to converse, and you have to. It's really important, I think, to have a sense of humor at work too. That kind of helps the day go by, and it's hard to do that by yourself. So you're going to need people to interact with, and cubicles allow for that.
And do you think anything useful comes out of all this overhearing? I guess one of the thoughts behind cubicles was that it was an interactive environment to some extent, where people just exchange ideas and talk to each other. But I'm not so sure if that's happening.
I think it's a give and a take. I think it's in some cases it works, in some cases it doesn't. I mean, I can tell for the people I work with now and that I have in the past that you can just look at their face and just kind of say, hey, is everything okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then if it's not, they'll say, no, we're having a problem with this. And it's just nice to have somebody to talk things out with. And cubicles definitely allow you to do that, even if you're not collaborating on the same project, but you get to vent a little bit and then get back to work.
I feel my cubicle neighbor, Dave Davies, and I, he is across the wall from me, and I feel like we're always playing this game of groundhogs, where for a little while we talk behind the wall where we can't see each other,
right.
And then we pop up and we stick our heads over the wall and we chat and then we sit back down. So it's just this funny kind of thing to see these heads kind of popping up.
Yeah, that's really funny, because those conversations tend to have a tipping point where somebody will mention something and then somebody else will follow up. And if the conversation dies there, it dies there. Otherwise, if it escalates, you see people starting to stand up and,
right.
and really give their opinion.
And when you sit down, it's a signal, like, this conversation is over now.
Exactly, exactly. And it's those little nuances that people really need to keep in mind when working in a cubicle environment, for
and
sure.
And what have you found helps you when you're working on a really tough deadline or you're having a tough day? What helps you focus in this environment?
For me, I can tell, people kind of tease me too, just because it's my body language, like I'll hunch my shoulders, and what I do is I scoot up. It's probably not very good for my eyes, but I scoot up to my computer screen, and then people can look and just say, okay, he's busy, but there are, lots of people just put up little signs or, kind of polite things like, I'm busy right now, come back in 15 minutes, something like that, that's perfectly acceptable.
Do you use headphones at all?
I do occasionally. Basically, I'll put on headphones if I have to listen to something. Maybe it's a voicemail on my iPhone that I need to see if it's important or not. But otherwise, I don't sit at my desk and listen to music all day. That kind of I just can't do that to get my job done.
And are you going to keep pursuing this issue of cubicles? We're going to have to go in a short moment, but do you think you'll stick with this topic of cubicles?
Yeah, it's just become kind of a fun part of my life. It's so funny because after you research it and you realize how important this is. And it is important because this is their lives we're talking about, and it's 8 to 10 hours every day of your life. And so you want to be able to walk into where you work and actually have somewhere comfortable and inspiring to work.
All right. James Thompson has written The Cubicle Survival Guide, Keeping Your Cool in the Least Hospitable Environment on Earth. James, thank you so much for being with us on Radio Times.
Thank you very much for having me.
And we'll be back after a short break and talk more about cubicle culture and living and working in them. Give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. Again, that's 1-888-477-9499, and tell us how you deal with cubicles. We'll be right back.
Ego Poe Classic Theater supports WHYY and is proud to present A Dybbuk at the Prince Music Theater now through June 17th. Pulitzer and Tony Award-winning playwright Tony Kushner brings his poetic flair to this legendary tale of love, ghosts, and faith. The Philadelphia premiere of this haunting Jewish drama of a young bride-to-be possessed by the spirit of her dead beloved. A Dybbuk at the Prince Music Theater. Tickets online at egopoe.org or 800-595-4TIX.
What's going on when grass of a different color spreads like wildfire in a lawn? I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next You Bet Your Garden, we'll reveal what to do when invasive Bermuda grass takes over your turf. Plus, answers to all your growing questions. That's You Bet Your Garden, Saturday morning at 11, right here on WHYY-FM.
The Cooper Heart Valve Center supports WHYY. Aortic valve stenosis affects nearly 300,000 people annually. Cooper is the first hospital in South Jersey offering a new non-surgical valve repair, the Sapien Heart Valve. This FDA-approved technology offers a treatment option for patients unable to undergo valve surgery and is expected to transform the treatment of aortic valve disease. More at 800-8-COOPER or cooperhealth.org/sapien.
And welcome back to Radio Times. I'm Mike and Scott in for Marty Moskowain. We're talking about cubicle life and culture today. And joining us now is John Goins. He is a researcher at the Center for the Built Environment at University of California, Berkeley. And he has researched how cubicles affect workers and their productivity. John Goins, thank you so much for being on Radio Times.
Sure, happy to be here.
And I want to invite our listeners to call in with their questions and stories from working in cubicles. What annoys you? What works for you? Maybe you've changed your workplace. 1-888-477-9499 is that number. Again, that's 1-888-477-9499. How do you work in your cubicle? And John Goins, you headed a survey of 65,000 office workers in different countries. What were some of their chief complaints when it comes to this setup?
You know, I think I'd like to echo a lot of the things that your previous guest was saying. Noise is always a problem. Sounds from folks nearby, cell phones, music. Privacy is also an issue. Sometimes people want more privacy when they're in a cubicle. They feel like they're being watched sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Cubicles also don't provide comfortable temperatures for folks. You know, if you're in a private office, maybe you can close the door to prevent wind from blowing in, things of that sort. So there's some indoor environmental quality issues that people are concerned about often as well.
What are some alternative models? Obviously, you could have a workplace where everybody has an office. That probably isn't feasible in terms of space. So what are some other models that we might have instead of a cubicle?
Well, we're seeing a lot of offices move to desks with no partitions, completely mm-hmm. open offices. And some research suggests that that actually helps with noise, that if you can see the people around you, that you're more likely to be quiet. But, you know, another way to think about this is that people are leaving the office. You know, there's co-work, there's working at home, there's third places, people work in coffee shops. They go where they need to go so that they can find a space where they can concentrate.
I guess coffee shops are noisy too, but it's a noise of our choice. So is it easier to deal with it when it's something we like?
Right. And if you chose to be there, it's a little easier to take, I would imagine.
Now, what are companies doing to address this issue of noise? There are some different things people have tried. For example, a company called Autodesk was experimenting with a whooshing sound. What is that?
So, yeah, white noise is one approach that's used in buildings. It's just sort of a steady noise that is supposed to sort of drown out intermittent noises like people talking. So mm-hmm. you'll often see that in buildings as a way to sort of help people concentrate. In other cases, I've seen offices where there's piped-in music, classical music, which is also supposed to help with productivity and sort of drown out those other noises.
How concerned are companies about this? I'm sure companies know that their employees have certain concerns, but is this a priority?
I think people are beginning to realize that it is a priority or that it should be a priority. Acoustics in general is sort of increasing in popularity as a research area. CBE has a number of industry partners, and for a long time we've been sort of saying acoustics is an issue, pay attention to it. And I think that message is finally, people are finally starting to hear that message.
And what do we know about acoustics and interruptions and such and worker productivity? We know what people say about it, but do we have any data in terms of how it really affects people's work and concentration?
Sure. So it affects different people differently. Mm-hmm. You know, generally, people who are noisy themselves tend to be less distracted by the noise.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the culprits, the noisemakers, you know, the folks who may be causing the problems are less influenced. But there might also be sort of an age effect that people who are younger actually benefit from the distractions. They're new to the organization. There's information that they glean from these interruptions. So it could be good for some people.
but not all. That is John Goins. He is a researcher at the Center for the Built Environment at the University of California, Berkeley. And we're talking about cubicles and how they affect our work life, our concentration, our productivity. Joining us on the phone at 1-888-477-9499 is Rick from Philadelphia. Hi, Rick. You're on Radio Times.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Thank you. Go ahead.
I just had a comment about observation, and it was a comment I received from a manager when I was in a supervisory position at one point, that his comment was that if I come out of my office four times a day and I see your head above the cubicle once, I know you're goofing off 25% of the time. I had an enlightening view on his concept of management.
So if you were standing up and chatting is what he was saying, right?
Yep.
So you think cubicles are a way of keeping track of what workers are actually doing?
I don't think that, no. I think that's a very inaccurate view of what he expressed, but it was enlightening on his management style.
All right. Thank you so much, Rick. And
right on.
Thank you. John Goins, we feel, I guess, as workers, we feel exposed when we're sitting in cubicles, and there is a certain sense of everybody knows what I'm doing right now, correct?
That's true. I mean, you may actually be engaged in work, but just the sense that someone could be watching, you know, it can be a little bit uncomfortable. You know, cubicles, the walls are high enough so that you feel like you have privacy, but you don't often have as much privacy as you think you do, and sort of people can watch you, and it does happen.
All right. And to go back to this this issue you were talking about in terms of noise, you said some companies are using classical music. Is that really helpful? Or I've never quite seen a lot of research on that, whether that actually helps people to concentrate better or to work better.
Well, that's actually based on a personal experience of mine. Many years ago, I worked in an office in a cubicle environment. And they did pipe in classical music sort of to keep us engaged and to drown out sounds. And I personally think that it did drown out sounds, but, you know, sometimes you maybe want to hear a different kind of music.
Mm-hmm.
Was maybe my biggest complaint about it.
And does it, I mean, I'm wondering if it doesn't have the same kind of effect like when you're in an elevator or in a department store where the music is just almost puts you to sleep at times.
It can, you know, it can itself sort of become just another distraction, and it's not always pleasant. But it may be better than overhearing your coworker's conversation about what they're having for dinner, or you know, babysitter plans, or things of that sort.
Let's take another call. We have Katie joining us from Holland. Hi, Katie. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. How are you today?
Good. Thank you. Go ahead.
So I was listening to this conversation, and of course, it brought up some memories. I used to work in a cubicle environment in various capacities. I'm a salesperson, and part of the thing that I liked about it is the collaborative environment, being able to bounce things off of each other in a nearby space, listen to what each other's up to. But I've certainly had the coworker that brought in the stinky food, which was really awful smelling, and I, you know, coworkers that have belched, or, you know, I'm in the middle and my two cubicle mates are fighting with each other across me and things of that nature. I currently work from a home office where I have a lot of time to, you know, stay focused on my task, but I do miss the camaraderie that is available when you're in an office environment where there is cubicles or even an open space. I've worked in that kind of scenario, too. So I just thought I'd make that comment, and I think I'm going to get your book, so thank you.
And Katie, I don't know if you're still there. If you are, I was wondering, do you think you're more productive now that you're at home?
You know, I have to say it really mixes. I do have an office to go to. I work in the hospitality industry, so I travel to my hotel pretty much once a week. And I do find that I'm a little less productive from a task-oriented standpoint. But the value of being around my colleagues and being able to, like I said, ask, collaborate, you know, just kind of as things are coming upon me, not having that on a daily basis, there's such a difference. So there's a certain amount of productivity, depending upon how you weigh it out, that you get when you're around other people, you know?
Yeah, but do you miss the colleagues if you look at it in all honesty, do you miss the colleagues for the social component, for saying, like, hey, did you try this new dinner place or whatever? Or is the input more about work? Because I wonder about that sometimes.
It's a little 50-50. I mean, okay. Part of it is just being in the environment where the work is happening and being able to say, oh, you know, I'm thinking about, you know, this contract and I want to get your feedback, or this, or, you know, complaining about a customer or something like that, you know, if that should happen. And then definitely there's the social aspect. I would say it's about half and half, just being around other people, being there to listen to them, helping them out and that kind of thing. So when you're working from home, at least in my case, it's all me. It's me and my customers pretty much, and a lot of, you know, emails and, you know, some phone calling, but not a lot of FaceTime. So that piece for me, I've noticed over the years, and I've been doing it for about four, I tend to get somewhat energized and, you know, picked up when I get around other people. And then that kind of keeps me going for a little while.
So, John Goins, it sounds like there is a lot of trade-off there. So you might get more peace, more quiet, but then you lose something as well when you're not in a kind of office cubicle environment.
That's true. You know, I will often choose to work at home if I know that I have a deadline that I sort of really need to push to get through and don't want any distractions. But it is valuable to be in the office and to sort of be able to collaborate on the fly with folks, or to, you know, bounce ideas off of them when you're stuck. So there are trade-offs.
And are companies giving their employees more flexibility in terms of where they work and where they can work on any given day?
I think that's becoming more and more common. I know certain organizations have a requirement that telecommuting must be an option for a certain percentage of a worker's work week. And I do often, you know, work from home or coffee shops and whatnot. I think people are recognizing that if you let people choose the workspace that'll work best for them, when it works best for them, they'll be more productive.
Let's take another call. We have Dana joining us from Westchester. Hi, Dana. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. Go ahead.
I was actually just going to comment on exactly what the last person, what he was just speaking of. And I think the cubicles are, to an extent, cool. They're designed to take away the human experience. So, you know, you're not supposed to, you're supposed to be quiet. You're supposed to not interrupt anyone. You're supposed to goof off 20% of the time or 25% of the time if you're standing up. It's kind of ridiculous. And I'm of a younger generation, and we will leave jobs because we're not having fun, part of the cubicle experience.
And you, so you worked in a cubicle. Are you currently still in a cubicle?
Absolutely not. That's the whole reason why I left. I actually went out on my own, and I started a dog walking business, and I've never been happier.
But was it the cubicle per se, or was it just being stuck in the same place for 8 hours a day?
It was the cubicle. It's gray. It's quiet. It's hot. The printer's right in front of you. You know, you hear people talking about this or that, but I'd rather hear that than hear nothing all day.
Thank you so much. That's a great point, Dana. And John Goins, what is it with this design? Why do cubicles look so drab most of the time? They all seem to have this kind of pale green carpeting and then the gray. So it just seems the color scheme is terrible.
Yeah, cubicles last for a long time.
Uh-huh.
So they may be around for 20 or 30 years. And in fact, my cubicle is actually sort of a light blue color, sort of a powder blue, which is not my preference.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of that design aspect can have an effect on the way people think about an organization. You know, if you have sort of new, bright finishes, sometimes people find that inspiring. You know, that in and of itself can increase productivity.
Yeah.
Whereas if you have sort of uninspiring conditions, you know, it affects morale. People might not be as inspired.
Yeah, but I guess if you want to go a little bold with the cubicles, then you will have those colors stick around for 20 years. So if you're choosing orange cubicles because it looks cool today, they'll be there in 20 years.
That's true. That's true. I was recently in an office building, and it was a fairly new one, actually, but they said they had those cubicles in storage for 30 years, and they sort of brought them back out and set them up again. And it looked like it was from, you know, another time period.
What about natural light? Have you heard anything in terms of how important that is to how people feel about where they work and their productivity?
Sure. I mean, you know, in some ways, everyone wants that corner office. mm-hmm. you know, where they have access to a window and they can see maybe trees and things of that sort. People love windows and light, and research does suggest that it helps productivity. I mean, we see all kinds of comments about how access to a window is sort of one of the best things about their office. And in fact, if people have access to a window, they might forgive the other inadequacies of the office, that it might be noisy or that, you know, other people might bring in smelly food, because they can just sort of peer off and see some beautiful nature or, you know, be engaged in another way.
We've heard a lot of research lately about all the problems with sitting down all day, which is part of this conversation as well. Are you hearing more about companies encouraging employees to get up, to walk around, to get out for a moment, speaking of natural light?
Yeah, you know, actually here in our office, we have a couple of coworkers who have standing desks.
Mm-hmm.
And so they actually allow folks to, you know, move the desk to an appropriate height depending on how they'd like to work at that moment. Because there is an increasing amount of concern about sort of being sedentary, sitting all day, and sort of the strain that that can put on the body after so many years of the same kinds of motion. So I think that is an increasing an area of increasing interest as well.
We're talking about cubicles. If you want to join the conversation, give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. Again, that's 1-888-477-9499. We mentioned earlier the kind of open floor plan offices that we'll talk more about in a moment, where there are no cubicle walls and so on. But I'm wondering if people don't prefer having a little bit of privacy over no privacy at all. What's your take on that?
You know, I was just actually looking at the responses from one building where folks actually said, we have too little privacy for it to be any good to us, so take down all the walls,
mm-hmm.
which I thought was kind of surprising. You know, they'd rather be able to sort of see everyone all the time rather than sort of retreating behind two walls.
So I guess the cubicle wall doesn't give you enough of anything.
That's true.
Okay.
I think that's what they were saying.
All right, let's take a very quick call. We have David from Lansdowne. David, we're coming up on a break, but what's your take on this?
Hello?
Hello, David. Sorry, we're coming up on a break, but what's your take on this thing?
Good morning. Well, I work in Center City, Philadelphia, and we had a wide-open workspace. We went to cubicles for better efficiency, and everyone appreciated it. I think we enjoyed our individuality. It gave us a sense of importance. We were able to express ourselves in our cubicle. I had artwork hanging all over. I had my own space heater, telephone, and my own radio. I will say I was told to tone my individuality down when I started to bring in salmon skin from the Reading Terminal Market and smoke that in my toaster oven. They didn't like that.
You did that in your office?
Yeah, I'm afraid it was. We all ate well. We enjoyed the Reading Terminal Market, but I started to get a little carried away and bring it back, and that was a little stinky.
So you're telling me you smoked fish in your cubicle?
Toasting salmon skin, which was a little more over the top.
Okay. Well, David, thank you so much for that call, and I'm glad you're enjoying cubicle life. We have to go to a short break here on Radio Times, but we'll be back with more with John Goins from the Center for the Built Environment at Berkeley, and we'll also take more of your calls at 1-888-477-9499. Again, that's 1-888-477-9499. Also joining us will be Mike Chudy of SAP. Stay tuned to Radio Times here on WHYY.
The United States Holocaust Memorial Museum supports WHYY and presents Deadly Medicine, Creating the Master Race, now on view at the Free Library of Philadelphia through July 8th. This exhibition focuses on the complicity of physicians and scientists in Nazi racial policies that led to the Holocaust and explores its implications for current-day medical ethics and social responsibility. For more about the exhibition and related resources, ushmm.org/deadlymedicine.
Natasha Trethewey has been named the new U.S. Poet Laureate. On the next Fresh Air, we feature our interview with her. Also, we remember the prolific science fiction writer Ray Bradbury, the author of Fahrenheit 451. He died Tuesday at the age of 91. We'll listen back to our 1988 interview with him. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY. I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. Noah Pippin survived three brutal tours in Iraq, but then went into the Montana wilderness and disappeared. What happened? Also, Tony-nominated Broadway star Tracy Bennett on taking on the role of Judy Garland, with so many who consider her an icon. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
Welcome back to Radio Times. I'm Mike and Scott in for Marty Moscowane. We're talking about working in cubicles and what that does to us and to our productivity. We're joined by John Goins. He's a researcher at the Center for the Built Environment at the University of California, Berkeley, and he has researched how cubicles affect workers and their productivity. And joining us now as well is Mike Chudy. He's head of design at SAP's Cloud Product Design. That's the Sao Alto campus. You're at, Mike, correct? And that place has no cubicles. So, Mike, what does your new campus look like?
Well, what we have is a brand new building on the new campus. Well, at least the inside is brand new. We took something that had been built in the 70s and retrofitted it for the new millennia. And the real new competition that we're experiencing in our own market. What we have done is really create a space based on our values going forward of transparency, honesty, innovation, but also execution. We wanted to empower the folks in our organization, give them control of their space, not put facilities between them and getting their work done.
So how does it, what does it look like, the spaces?
Well, it's sort of an open space. We have created what we call Team of 10 rooms. So when we develop software, we work in a model called agile development, where we have small groups of 8 to 10 people, typically engineers, designers, product managers, and content people, and they work on a piece of the software. So that philosophy of how we build translated nicely into how we work in the space. So we created a team of 10 rooms that all have window views. It's glass walls with a little bit of opacity, so there's a little bit of visual privacy, but we really pushed for transparency, people being visible and active in the space. And we have about 220 people all sitting in the quote-unquote corner office. We have what we call library rooms, when people need to go and do heads-down work. We also have telephone booths that can handle 2 to 3 people who might need to have a soundproof conversation, a one-on-one, or have a call with a customer. We have drop-in seating like you might have at an airport in a business lounge where you can just sit down and just start working. We also have what we call the Zen Room. It's just a little open corner that has whiteboard from floor to ceiling, and it's whatever you want to do in there.
All right. And are you hiring? Just kidding.
We are.
All right.
We're actually in a very competitive market with Apple, Google, Facebook, and those sorts who are IPOing all around us, and we have to be competitive.
And I'm wondering, Mike Chudy, you spoke about this open space and everybody is in a corner office. A lot of times, office hierarchy is expressed in the very architecture of the office. So you're one of the bosses. What kind of space do you have?
We have, well, let me put it politically correct. We're centrally located in the middle of the building. We use the same furniture as everyone else does, and arguably we're in the worst spot. We don't get the sunlight from the windows, but we're centrally accessible, and we really try to advocate, lead by example, and try to walk around. So don't hide in your offices all day taking 30-minute telephone calls for 6 hours.
And John Goins, this all sounds very intentional. So this company, SAP, thought about what do we want to do in this space, and then let's design a space that allows us to do this. But how often does that happen?
You know, I think it happens quite frequently, in fact. And sometimes organizations get it right, sometimes they don't. But one of the things that I think is really important about what Mike just said is the issue of control, that they were trying to give folks control so that they could select a space that would work for them. And I think if you can sort of make those kinds of spaces available, that's when these environments are a success.
Mm-hmm. And Mike, Trudy, how is this working out for you guys so far?
Well, we're about 3 months into it now,
mm-hmm.
and we had several different styles of cubicles on our campus, some that had 6-foot walls, some that had 4-foot walls, all very different, and we had people spread all over the place, and when you're really trying to work together as a team, it was really hard. So one was getting everyone in one building, and that was a check plus. There were some people who had nested in their cubes, had ganged them together to make them work for them in a part of the campus that was working okay. And they had a little bit of cubicle fixation. They missed their cubes. But when we said, you don't get a cube, you get a whole building to make your own, it began to change the mindset. So day one, we probably had 50-50. 50% loved it, 50% were, I missed my cube. I'd say by Friday that it shifted to really creating true believers out of everyone, and it was that fast.
Mm-hmm.
There's some kinks, like anything, bugs in the first release, and we're trying to fix those.
Like what? What were some of the problems?
Well, you had talked earlier about noise generation.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we had some acoustic noise generators to create that low hum. Well, we didn't really need that because we have a very loud HVAC system. That was really designed for drop ceilings and not open ceilings. And so we're having to work with facilities to make that work a little bit better for the open space that we have. And that noise is a huge disruptor. What's nice is each one of these Team of 10 rooms has what we call barn door doors that they can close, so they can keep the conversations contained and also quiet for themselves and cut out the ambient noise outside.
And does this create competition, and maybe it's supposed to, between those teams of tens? So you're part of my room and those guys over there are in their room, so it kind of has this pod culture?
Well, what's interesting is the team started naming their rooms.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't ask them to do that. They had some housewarming parties. One team did a ribbon cutting. They built a ping pong table in their room just so they could, you know, blow off some steam. But as far as team of 10 room to team of 10 room competition, we haven't seen that. But part of why we set it up this way is to be able to move folks around where they need to be in order to solve problems. So one team of 10 may get broken up in 6 months to form a whole new team of 10.
And John Goins, it sounds like this kind of agility is also the way of the future, that desks are moved easily, setups are moved easily, so people can go where they need to be.
That's true. You know, sometimes we see spaces where they're just sort of pillows, you know, that people can use as chairs, and they can reconfigure the space in any of a number of ways. So, you know, if you have an organization that values collaboration or where people need to sort of create new designs and orientations on the fly, this kind of space that Mike is talking about could be really, really useful. And I do think it is the way of the future. I think lots of designers are interested in creating more spaces like this.
And it must also, the look of a place sends a clear signal, I think, to an employee. So when you're walking into the place, you're getting a vibe, not to to use this old cliche term. Mm. But you do, you get a sense, I guess, of the values of the company just by the way the place looks. Is that true, Mike Trudy?
Absolutely. We get the comments that this doesn't feel like SAP. SAP is a company that does pretty serious finance software for the largest companies in the world. And when you come into our building, you feel like you sort of could be at Facebook or Apple or some of the other companies. And it changes people's attitudes.
Is this also on your level, was this in a way to attract the young, creative, whatever, quirky workforce that you might need at this point?
I think we have a very multi-generational, multicultural
uh-huh.
workplace. So we cut across many different age groups, and we have people from all over the world working in this building.
And first and foremost, we wanted to help them. These are the people that we've invested in, and we wanted to help them become as innovative as possible. But certainly a second priority is to also attract those future employees to come to SAP.
I want to invite Joey to join our conversation. He's calling in from Berwyn. Hi, Joey. You're on Radio Times.
Oh, good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
I just had a few comments. It really takes a special kind of person to work in a cubicle day in and day out, you know, for years. It's a very trying situation with the noise and all the other things that the callers and the guests have talked about. But I think the bottom line with productivity is, I mean, offices with windows are great and fresh air is great, but I think the bottom line is you really have to be happy with what you're doing, because if you're really happy with what you're doing, you can work in a closet and it doesn't make a difference. I think that's really a good point there.
Joey, thank you so much for your call to Radio Times.
Thanks.
John Goins, what's your take on that?
I think that makes a lot of sense. You can probably put someone who really enjoys their work in any environment, and they'll be productive and happy. But I do think that the design has an effect. Mike was saying that he wanted the people at SAP to feel like the company had invested in them. And that's what good design can do. It can make people feel like the company cares about them, and that they are invested in them doing their best work. And I think that's an important piece of the puzzle.
I actually worked in a closet at a pre-IPO startup. Work through those issues if you really love what you're doing. And
it was a walk-in closet, I hope?
It was a 10-foot-wide by 20-foot-long box with no windows, and four of us were in there because we were growing so quickly, and we made it work, and we made it our own. But it does get old, and you can't really count on that true believer, passionate person in every role.
Yeah.
We happened to say, yes, we would take that space and make it our own. So because we had a choice that we would sit in that closet, we were pretty cool, and we waved the pirate flag and felt good about that. But not everyone's going to choose that.
Yeah, let's take another quick call. We have Melissa joining us from Newark. Hi, Melissa, you're on Radio Times.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I actually love my cubicle environment. It's an office with plenty of windows, and there are four cubicles in there. We can't see each other, but the thing that that really frightens me sometimes is when, say, my manager comes around, and I don't know that he's coming, and it's like, it's shocking. You know, I jump all the time, but I'm getting used to footsteps and the sounds of different people's gates and things, and then we'll have other folks come in looking for the guy that sits next to me, which is in the corner. Oh, he's not there. Or I'm making a phone call and people start chatting really loudly, and it's like, shh, shh, quiet down, or my colleague sneezes really loud while I'm on the phone. And also the whispering gets to me. I hear whispers on the other side of the cubicle.
Yes, and then you can't help but there's part of you that thinks, well, if they're whispering, it's got to be good, so maybe I should tune in. So, Melissa, I also have the experience often of being startled because I'm completely deep into something I'm doing and then somebody is suddenly behind me. John Goins, that must be something you hear about, that people just suddenly get startled by somebody coming up on them.
Sure, you know, since cubicle walls aren't that high, you know, if someone just stands up for a second to stretch, you know, behind you, in the cubicle behind you, that might startle you. Or, you know, maybe you're wearing headphones and you're sort of listening to music and someone just wants to come by and have a quick chat. You know, those are all the kinds of distractions that can happen in cubicles and can make them sometimes a little bit challenging for folks.
So, John, Mike, Judy, the open setup, there will be no more startling, I guess, because everybody will be out in the open.
Well, again, we have sort of an open setup where we have a lot of transparency. And I'll have to be honest. People did get startled when you rounded the corner and you were up against a glass panel. You would see them out of the corner of your eye. And that was disruptive for, I think, the first week or two. And then people modified the space. They maybe dropped in a whiteboard. We're actually going to put translucent film over it to help block that. But people began to get used to people walking by, and they adjusted.
Yeah,
they normed to it.
And what are you seeing in terms of productivity? I know it's early on, but are you seeing people collaborating? Are you seeing some of the things that you wanted to achieve with the setup?
And this was the first week. It was really a great story. We had both conflicts. I was really actually excited to hear about, because the teams had to figure it out. No facilities, cubes to mediate. But we had a Friday afternoon, and two guys were debating on whether they go home or not. But they decided to walk through a presentation, and they used one of our media spaces. And because everything is transparent and glass, the engineers surrounding them in these Team of 10 rooms saw that they were walking through a concept presentation, and it suddenly turned into an ad hoc workshop in the late afternoon on a Friday. That's pretty cool.
So instead of happy hour.
Exactly. It was a happy hour, except it was work, and some things to be fun don't have to be fun.
Yeah, yeah. And do you see this kind of setup? You said a lot of people come in and say, that doesn't look like SAP. Do you see this setup spreading to some of the other parts of the company as well?
We do. So we have efforts in Germany to create spaces like this. We also have, on the other side of our campus, a whole series of buildings that are going to be modified in a similar fashion. In our situation, we involved the people early on in the design process in a very participatory way, so they were involved in workshops. So it's really their voice that's being heard here. We had to point it in a particular direction, but that what we have here is unique to them.
Yeah, and that is the voice of Mike Chudy, and with that we're going to have to close. He's with SAP and their Sao Alto campus, which has no more cubicles. We were also joined by John Goins. He is a researcher at the Center for the Built Environment at the University of California, Berkeley. Thank you so much for all of you who called in. Radio Times is produced by Susan Greenbaum, Patty McMahon, Dennis Devine, Debbie Builder, and we had help from Jonathan Best. Our engineer has been Al Banks. Thanks again for listening to Radio Times here on WHYY.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.